Well, how are y'all this morning? Great, 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 great. Oh, we've got a couple more. Come on down. We'll wait on you. We're like spilling back into the aisles. That's awesome. So we've been doing this thing called Advent Conspiracy. And what we've been saying about that is that we're going to do Advent and we're going to do Christmas a little differently. But I don't want to make any assumptions about that. And so here's what I want to ask you is, what's your sense, or let me ask one question first and I'll get to the second. First question is, how is your family doing Christmas differently? Yeah. You're going to celebrate it. Can you talk about how you're going to celebrate it differently? It's okay. We'll come back to you. No problem. Yeah.
Every year we go and put out this candle and put this money on the ground and we leave it there for the poor people.
So that's what you're doing this year? Or you're just talking about what you remember? Every year? Oh, every year you do that. All right, that's awesome. Anyone else about how Christmas, or how have your parents been talking to you about how it's going to be different this year? Yeah.
We're not
going to
get as many presents because we're donating to the Well in Africa.
You're not going to get as many presents because you're donating to the Well in Africa. How do you feel about that? Oh, great. So if you didn't hear that, at first she was like bummed. She was like, I kind of want more presents, but now she's excited that folks are getting fresh water. So thanks. Anyone else think about, in your family, have you talked about doing it different? Yeah. You're making homemade gifts. How's that for you? Fine. It's more fun than buying. All right. I've seen one of your homemade gifts. It's pretty awesome, I just want to say. Anyone else want to kind of talk about how your family's talking about Christmas and how it might be different? Was that a hand, Ella? Or you were just stretching? You were stretching. Okay. Yeah.
My family's making a lot of presents out of the supplies that we have.
So you're making presents out of the supplies that you have. Okay, awesome. So now I have another question for you, because it's part of the thing that I love. One of the things that I really love about Christmas is that you get to sing Christmas songs. And so in our family, my wife, Mary, she, when Christmas music comes on, she, like, the radio, every radio in our house is, the radio in the car, it's always Christmas music. And so I kind of like it, but there's one song that I love more than any of the other ones. But I want to hear from you first. Favorite Christmas songs? Who's got a favorite?
Mary, did you know?
Mary, did you know? Yeah. Santa Claus is Coming to Town. All right. Christmas, favorite Christmas song?
Jingle Bells.
Jingle Bells. Very cool. Anybody else? Yeah. Walking in the Winter Wonderland. Anything else? Yeah. Any version of the 12 Days of Christmas, okay. Santa Claus is Coming to Town. My favorite song. Anybody else? Want to make sure? You have another one, okay. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That's a favorite in our... Blaze, did you have one? No? Okay. My favorite Christmas song is Little Drummer Boy. Little Drummer Boy. Do you all know that song?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you why I love it. I'll tell you why I love it. I love the song because it's about this little boy, and he doesn't have anything, and he's kind of sitting there, and he sees the three magi, and they give him gold and frankincense and myrrh, and he's like, I don't have anything to give, and he says it in the song, I'm just a poor boy, what can I give? And we're going to listen to just a part of it and see if you recognize this song. It was in it was a different version. you couldn't hear the words. So we don't have any Take Six fans apparently in here. Someone in the 9 o'clock service has said, what language was that in? The language of jazz. But so I didn't choose a good version to play for you all, but one of the things he was saying is, I have no gifts to bring, and the little drummer boy's like, so what can I do? And here's Jesus, and he recognizes that Jesus is really important. He's like, there are all of these gifts, and I have nothing to bring. And then he realizes, well, the only thing I have is my drum, and I'm just going to play my drum for you. And then that's when you hear the pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum, right? And I think that why I love that song is it strikes me that part of what Christmas is about is that when we think about Christmas and what we have to give to God, and last week when you were listening to Pastor Tim, he was saying, you know, we're doing Christmas differently. We're going to try and dig some wells for some people that don't have fresh water. And he said, but you know, as kids, sometimes you may not feel like you're a part of it because you don't have a ton of money. And he said, but there are things that you can give. And I want to reinforce that and just say it again, is part of why I love the little drummer boy is that you don't have to have money. Part of what it is that you just give what you have. And so maybe what you have is a great smile. Then you can give that. Or maybe what you have is your ability to help someone, you know. Or maybe what you have is your willingness to listen to people. Whatever it is, that's what we give to God. And so as we talk, when I talk kind of in the adult sermon, I'm going to come back to that. But really wanted to emphasize that this year, part of doing Advent and Christmas differently is that we give whatever we have, and it just doesn't have to be money. All right? We good? Okay, I did this with the first group, so I want to do it again. Everybody come in. Can we just put our hands in the center? Come on. Come on. Huddle up. All right. Everybody wants to be under. Okay, everybody put your hands in. Then on three, we'll say Advent. Can we do that? Ready? One, two, three. Advent! Woohoo! Can we give him a hand? Okay, don't lean on the... So Redistribution Sunday, you know, it's been really amazing for me engaging in Advent this year. It's one of the things that kind of happens is I'm kind of out and about. Is I'll be out with Imani and Verena, and it's so funny to kind of see how folks engage with them. And I think people are really in many ways they love this whole notion of Christmas, and so they'll lean down to the girls, and we're at some store, and they'll say, "Are you excited for Christmas?" And they'll be like, "Yeah," and then they'll say, "Or have you been good? And, you know, is Santa Claus coming to your place?" And what's been amazing for me is, without trying to sound grinchy, as I say this, is like this year, Christmas and the whole notion of approaching Christmas has been really different because in our family, we've said, "Hey, let's do things a little differently." And so, you know, like the adult is there with the girl and said, "Have you been good? Are you getting all kinds of toys?" And I'm standing in the back going, "No, they're not." And that's probably not good either. But part of it is just saying that we're thinking about doing it differently. And how does that play out? And then as I was thinking about, well, how you do Christmas differently, I started thinking about, well, we know that what we're going to do is the money that we're going to save or the money that we would have spent on stuff, we're going to take it and we're going to give it to folks who don't have fresh water. And so in a sense, we know what redistribution looks like. But then I started thinking, well, how does this then connect to just the broader notion of Advent? And what strikes me is that there is there's a principle there that I think is challenging us. The other thing I want to say just kind of by way of intro is it sometimes, as I've stood up and preached, what I've done is said, "Hey, here's the word of the Lord," and bring it to you. And I think today, rather than doing it that way, I'm going to say that this is kind of a proposition, because I'm not real clear on all of it, but I'm wondering if the challenge is there before us, and we'll kind of see what happens. But we've got a verse. It's out of Isaiah 61. It's verses 1 through 3. And what I'd like to do is just have all of us read this verse together, and then I'll come back and kind of ask you what you think is being said here. So Isaiah 61, verses 1 through 3, let's read it together. "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called mighty oaks, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. So, Isaiah 61, verses 1 through 3. What strikes you as we look at the verse, as you heard it, as you were reading it? What stands out to you? Sure. Okay, so the freedom that God gives us when his son came first as a baby, then grew up to eventually die, right? Yeah, Larry.
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit at variance of what we generally think of is what the modern church says the gospel is.
It's at variance with what the modern church says what the gospel is? How is it at variance?
Well, the modern church says that you know, the gospel is just a private matter between you and God, and you take Jesus into your heart.
Okay. Okay, so if you couldn't hear Larry, what he was saying is that the modern church, it's the notion is that you take Jesus into your heart. It's a very private matter, and then this seems to speak of something a little differently. I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Comfort all who mourn, not just those that we want to comfort, not just the ones who are easy to comfort, but all. Okay. Yeah. Other reactions to this. Yes, JR.
It's a big call. Like there are a lot of things that that we are called to
Okay, so it's a big call, but we've been anointed to do it, so we don't have to be overwhelmed by it, right? We can be empowered. Yeah, Mo.
Kind of in the same light, the last phrase for the display of his splendor, that call and all those things that we're called to do are ultimately for God's glory and not for ourselves or not even for the people we're doing.
Okay, for this display of God's splendor. Does this verse ring familiar to any of you? Where else do we find it? In Luke, right? It's really in the place where Jesus starts, he inaugurates his ministry. He's in the temple, and he'd been gone for a while, and they're in the temple, and then he reads the words of Isaiah, and then essentially roots himself in that tradition. The other thing is that it's commonly called, this passage is commonly called the year of the Lord's favor. And it's kind of in that second slide, it'll show up there, the year of the Lord's favor. And when I first saw that, something hit me and I thought, you know, this part of this kind of rings true to something else to me. And I tried to kind of think about it and I think, particularly if we are reading this and then listening to it with Jewish ears, what we would understand is the year of the Lord's favor actually harkens back to something called the Jubilee. You all familiar with the Jubilee? And the Jubilee, this is what it is. It's found in Leviticus 25. And the Jubilee is simply this. Inasmuch as we as people, on the seventh day, we are to rest, what God says is that on the seventh year, the ground is to rest, right? And you're not supposed to till the ground, and you're actually supposed to live off of the things that you harvested in the sixth year. And so that was kind of the Jubilee. But then interestingly enough, if you go through a cycle of that seven times, so the seventh year seven times, then on the 50th year, what you would have is what we call the Jubilee year. And this is really interesting. In the Jubilee year, what God is asking of his people is to not only let the ground rest, but what we're supposed to do is forgive all debts. Anybody who's indebted to you, forgiven. Anybody who may be a captive of yours, who you might have kind of indentured or who is a servant of yours because of something, forgiven. And then the land that you may have had, you may have owned since the last Jubilee, it's supposed to go back to the original owner. So that the whole notion is that the land and money and the whole bit, but it's really tied to the land. It's God's land. It's not ours. And so while I might own a piece of property and I might have made some money off of it, even if I give that to God, what God is saying, it should go back to the original owner. Because all of it is God's, and all we are doing is stewarding what God has given to us. How does that strike you all when you hear about that? So Larry says it sounds a little communistic. Hard to do, right? For me, when I first saw it, it was like, man, I'm so glad I'm a New Testament person, not an Old Testament person, right? I mean, it is hard to do. And the reality is, what we'll find is God laid this out as a principle, and then he said, do this, and then he'll come back through and say, but you didn't trust me enough to do it. And even God's people didn't live by the Jubilee. I'm pointing up here, but they didn't live by the Jubilee. Yeah, Chris May. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to accumulate. Or if you accumulate, it's only for a period of time, and then things start over, which is really interesting. Yes? Great news for poor people and bad news for rich people. and bad for you. Yeah, I appreciate the honesty. It is this notion in which for those that don't, there is certainly this sense of leveling and equaling. And for those that have, it different message. Yeah, Don. So Don is pretty much ready to die after the Jubilee year. But his point is, that it's going to happen only once in a lifetime, right? So every 50 years, it'll happen. Let me ask another question that's connected to that is And part of what I love about being at church here and being in this community is that we're real. So I don't want to hold up the Jubilee as this thing that we should all be doing. Well, why don't we do this? Right? I mean, other than don't give me the easy answer. It's like, hey, it's Leviticus, and Leviticus says a bunch of stuff we don't do. But this sounds like a good thing. I mean, this sounds like something that's really, it makes sense, right? Why don't we do it? And again, to be real clear, that Israel didn't do it very well either. I mean, God comes back and says, you know, on the one hand, he's like, you started to do it, but then you didn't believe in it and you didn't. Why don't we do it? Why don't we live by Jubilee?
We don't have enough faith.
We don't have enough faith? Really? That's tough to give it all away, right? And start at ground zero. So if I've got some property in my house, I'm just supposed to give it back away to the original person? And maybe it doesn't make sense in this day and age. Why else? Why not live by Jubilee as Christians? Yeah, Larry.
Same reason the Israelites did, because it was
disadvantageous to the rich and powerful. Okay.
They ran things. They still do.
Okay. Carissa. Okay, so if you didn't hear that, she says that we trust God to provide for our spiritual needs, but not necessarily for our, did you say material?
Practical.
Our practical needs or material needs. I saw another hand.
I think we live day to day, so then to rest for a year would be really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, so the comment is that to rest for a full year, it would be hard. I mean, because we live day to day, and then what would you do if you were resting? Like, and that really resonates with me, because like I'm pretty comfortable standing up in front of a group of people and talking and things like that. And then, but I'll go home in the evenings and sit around the table, and Mary will say to me, because she's had kid contact all day, and she's like, talk to me, engage me in something. I was like, I don't have anything to say. I'm tired. And so Jubilee for me would be like, oh my gosh, I've got to talk to my family for more than, hi, how are you? How did your day go? And that's hard. I mean, I'm not making a joke about that. That's hard. And then what do we do for recreation? Because if I don't, I'm giving stuff away. I can't afford a TV, and then I'm in big trouble. Personal confession there. Yeah, Lori. We don't trust that it's fair or that people will take advantage of it. That's why we don't live by Jubilee. And part of all of this setup is to say, and this is why I'm suggesting that this is really just kind of a proposition, because I'm not smart enough to figure out all the mechanics of this. I just know that the whole notion of good news could strike us in different ways. So if we scroll back to the verse and we read it again, it says, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. And I think the first thing that we have to hear is that when we think about Christ breaking into this world and how Christ saw himself, because he used Isaiah's words to inaugurate his ministry, is that good news, yes, good news to all of us. Yes, salvation to all of us. Yes, reconciliation to God the Father for all of us. But first and foremost, it means that the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. And much like the comment that we heard earlier was like, boy, this benefits some and it doesn't benefit others. And I think part of the message that we have to hear around Christmas, at least as Isaiah's talking about it, and as Jesus would come back and root himself in, is that good news is directed towards a particular group of folks first. And when Christ breaks into this world, what he is doing is breaking into this world for those who don't have money, who don't have resources, who don't have material needs, who need comfort, who are jailed, who can't take care of themselves. And the first message of good news is that Christ has broken into the world to help those who don't have. Now, I'm not saying that Christ's entry into this world, the birth of Jesus, isn't for all of us. But it strikes me as we think about at least how Jesus was defining his ministry, that there is a particular group that it's for. Not only did he say the Lord has anointed him to proclaim good news, but he sent him to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners. One of the things that's hard for me to come to grips with when I think about Christmas is I want this feel-good message so that we could all be there, so that we could all be like, yes, this is good for all of us. And I think the reality of Scripture sometimes demands me to take a closer look. Later on in that verse, he says, as he's proclaiming the year of the Lord's favor, that what he wants to do is to bestow on them, the poor, a crown of beauty instead of ashes. Some translations talk about a crown of garland instead of ashes, to bring them from death to life. Ashes represents death. Then the garland represents life. He also says that an oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. And so part of me hearing Isaiah in this message is to say, Christ is breaking into the world, and what he's doing is creating a reversal, and sometimes it's a reversal that I'm not very comfortable with. And if Christ is is intending to bring good news to the poor. And he's intending to bring freedom to the captives. If he's intending to replace despair with praise, how do I aid in that effort? It strikes me that not only does Jesus understand this when he roots himself in this tradition, but it strikes me that Mary understood this. And when Mary is in Luke 2, when she sings her song, what's commonly known as Mary's song or the Magnificat, she has the same kind of notions in mind, if we can pull that scripture up. And Mary said, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name." So very personal. This is what God has done for Mary. But then when we go to the next part, "His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arms. With his arm, he has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors." And so part of what Mary's recognizing is that the birth of the Messiah, she's about ready to give birth, and the birth of the Messiah is inaugurating something that's different as well. That those who don't have the opportunity to participate in a way of living and in a life in which they can have. And surely what Christ did was to come to bring, to make sure that our souls and our spirits are filled, and that we can experience salvation that way. But I think what we have to catch on to, that we as a community have been doing as a part of the Advent conspiracy, is there is an economic measure that's related to Christ breaking into the world as well. Not only is there an economic measure, and here's my proposition, is I wonder, if we were to take the Christmas message seriously, "He has anointed me to bring good news to the poor," that if what we would do would be to say, this isn't just about the Advent conspiracy. This isn't just about reorienting my life during Advent. But really the call is to reorient day to day what it means to be Christian. And I wonder if what God is calling us to do as a community is not to just get geared up once a year so that we're doing Advent differently, important, but really this is a challenge to say, in our daily lives, how are we preaching good news to the poor? How are we comforting those who are mourning? How are we coming alongside those who are in despair? How are we creating space and welcoming those who don't normally receive that? And that's risky, because it means doing some things differently. Right now, Advent conspiracy could be this quaint thing, and I'm not trying to minimize it at all. I think what we're doing and the money that we will eventually send to those in Kenya is amazing. As it relates to Jubilee, as it relates to Jesus breaking into the world, what it means, the cost of what it means to be Christian, I wonder if what God is doing is calling us to think about things differently. And I think that rather than depending on Jubilee at every 50 years kind of a thing, that the birth of Jesus means that what we can do is orient and posture ourselves towards God in such a way that says, this becomes a day-to-day endeavor. Jesus being born into this world means that I don't have to be confined to a once every 50 years kind of thing. That actually what I'm being called to do is to say, I'm preaching good news to the poor on a daily basis. I'm changing how I consume, how I engage, and how I connect with people differently. And yes, there's going to be a spiritual benefit. But there's also going to be an economic ramifications. I got to tell you, part of why I say this, part of why I say this is just a proposition is I don't know if I can do it. Because this season, you know, when Mary came to me and she said, so what do you want for Christmas this year? Part of my posture was to say, I really don't want anything. I have so much. I don't want anything. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, you know that new phone that I can get a discount for? If I wait until after Advent Conspiracy and get it in February, that's still keeping in the spirit of it, huh? Or those new fair trade jeans that I can't seem to find, what about if I get those in May? It's at least not during Advent. And so when I stand up here and talk about that Christmas and the birth of Christ is Jubilee every day, I don't know if I can live up to that. What I do know, though, is that I don't have to do that on my own. Part of the reason why we wait on Christ is because we know that Christ will come alongside us to not only help us do the things that we know are important, but the things that we don't think we can do as well. Redistribution to me obviously means that we are going to bring the things that we haven't spent on ourselves so that folks can have fresh water. But just like I was telling the young people earlier, it also means giving all of ourselves. Inasmuch as the little drummer boy gave everything that he had and laid it before Jesus, I think part of Jubilee means that we lay everything that we have before Jesus. And we don't have to wait every 7 years, and we don't have to wait every 50 years. But what we can do is try to figure out what it means to do it on a consistent basis. Here in just a moment, what I'm going to ask us to do is, as you know, for those of you who are part of the community, we have been pausing the taking of communion as a way of saying thanks to God for how he has saved us, how he is saving us. Well, and we've been finding other ways to say thank you and to wait on God. This morning, what I'd like to suggest that we do is we're going to bring ourselves, mainly ourselves, we're going to bring ourselves and offer it up to God. And if part of what you are going to offer to God is some of the offering as it relates to Advent Conspiracy, that's great. But the most important thing is that you are giving yourself. You are laying it before Jesus. So much like we would do in communion, what we'll do is we will start with the folks in the balcony. They'll come down, and they'll come forward, and we've got two boxes. And what I'd like to do is to invite everyone to come forward. And if you have an offering, just go ahead and lay it in the box. But if you don't have an offering, I'd still like to invite you to come forward and just symbolically put yourself in this box to lay it before the child who's going to be born, who can equip us to do more than we think is possible or unimaginable. The musicians will play. It's the same thing, but just invite you all to come forward. And then once the row behind you is gone, you'll just file out and do that. So I'm going to invite us to do that now. I'm going to ask the musicians to go ahead and come forward and prepare. Let's pray together, shall we?